Ed, Season 7, Episode 14, The Other Side is over, but we're just getting started here on post-show recaps, and now here are the two guys who are going to get this podcast to you, PDQ, actually PFQ, Josh Wigler and Alex Kidwell. Alex Kidwell, what's going on?
Not too much, Josh. It's good to be talking Walking Dead, and interesting to be doing it without Rob this time.
Interesting to be doing it without Rob. Yes, Rob Cesternino, who is usually here with us on these podcasts after The Walking Dead every week, is en route to New York City, to my turf right now, red-eyeing it on his way over to New York for the live Know-It-Alls event happening later this week. So Rob cannot be here with us, but I feel like we can hold it down, Alex. I feel like we've got this.
I hope so. I'd like to think so.
You know, it might be a little bit of a suicide mission, but I feel like that could work out. You know, it's not doesn't have to be a suicide mission.
We're like the Sasha and Rosita trying to just get this thing done here.
It's going to be a real slugfest to determine which one of us gets the honor of being Sasha and who gets stuck with being Rosita.
I don't think either option's too appealing right now.
Listen, I'm a big Sasha fan, but I mean, she is on the wrong side of the fence at the moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's tough. It's tough. All right. So lots to talk about here in the not quite penultimate episode of Season 7 of Walking Dead, but it definitely feels like we are moving into finale territory here. Definitely feels like we're in that final stretch. I felt like this episode had a lot of that kind of forward momentum that you see at the end of the season. Not necessarily at the end of a Walking Dead season, because a Walking Dead season is structured so awkwardly sometimes, but it really does feel like we're really pushing to that final stretch.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. I definitely think, you know, I mean, two episodes to go, so we kind of need to be. We need to be drawing towards some kind of conclusion.
You'd hope so.
Well, I mean, we always end the seasons and half seasons, at least some kind of, you know, bookend to a degree.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we know this is building towards something. But, yeah, this episode, I mean, this was pretty hilltop-centric. And, you know, I think we kind of knew this was coming to a large degree. But it got interesting there, I think, towards the back third of it, I think really held my attention much more so than the rest of it.
Yeah, well, I'll be straight up. I mean, listen, I have been fairly down on The Walking Dead, certainly over the course of Season 7. There have been episodes that I've really been into, but more often than not, I've been pretty down on the show. Alex, this is one of my favorite episodes of the season. It's really not close. I thought this was great. I thought this was a really solid episode of Walking Dead, and would you believe it, it was the Rosita episode that, you know, really won me over.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah, I mean, I thought it was interesting. I thought it certainly had its moments, but I mean, to me, it just, I guess maybe it's just the continuation of the slow build. I just, like, you know it's coming, but you don't love it when it hits you, I guess, to some degree.
I think for me, it kind of, like, you know, to go back to sort of that, like, propulsive quality, that it really does feel like it has this momentum towards the end of the season. Like, I kind of view it as, it feels like the first act of the finale. Like, it feels like, you know, if this is like a 3-hour finale that we're barreling into, that's just like, that's structurally how it felt to me. You know, people proactively taking on Negan, getting ready to assassinate the guy. Like, there's a lot of stakes involved in that kind of a mission. A lot of emotional stuff going on with Maggie and Daryl. Some great Simon and Gregory stuff going on. And I know you're a Simon and Gregory guy as well. So I think those scenes were really great.
Yeah, absolutely. I think anytime you get Simon and Gregory together, that's a level of nervous tension. I'm certainly here for that uncomfortable dynamic. But yeah, it's very fun. And, you know, I think even now you've got Simon kind of like making light of his own expressive face and stuff. Like, that's pretty good.
I love it. Yeah, but he just is giving Dr. Carson the look for like 20 minutes uninterrupted. Yeah. I would watch a YouTube clip that just loops that.
You didn't get what I was saying there? I've been told I have a very expressive face.
Yeah, and wow, the luxury of Simon no longer being a gin guy, that he just gets to decide that, you know, one gimlet goes wrong and he's done with gin. He gets to be that choosy in the zombie apocalypse with his booze. What a life, this guy.
Yeah, we've never really seen too much of Simon, what he's doing when he's not out on the job, but I imagine it's a pretty good setup he's got as well. I wonder where it is and what it looks like. I'm curious.
Apparently he drew a map for Gregory, so maybe in the future we'll get to hang out at Simon's office.
Yeah.
Maybe he's got I know that Atari is really the system at the sanctuary, but perhaps, just perhaps, Simon has the PS3 hookup and maybe has Grand Theft Auto 5.
Yeah, it's like, he's like founded another branch of saviors over across the way, like on the other side of the pond. He's got his own chapter, if you will.
Yeah, at his own satellite station. All right, well, let's start digging into the episode. There's a lot to discuss. The episode begins with us really getting to see that these Hilltoppers, man, they're serious. They really want to go to war. Back in the mid-season premiere, I think it was, when everyone is going and talking to Gregory, and Gregory's, his whole rhetorical and talking about how we're not going to war, get out of here, nothing's happening here. And then a bunch of Hilltoppers show up outside of the mansion, and they're like, hey, if you guys are taking on the Saviors, we're totally game for that. This montage at the start of the episode shows that that was not just talk. Like, these guys are really willing to put their money where their mouth is. They're going to knife throwing class. They're going to knife slashing class. It seems like every class involves knives.
Yeah, well, I guess you make do with what you got, and I guess the Saviors are hoarding bullets and taking guns every time they see those, so you gotta try to figure it out some way, and that's a weapon that's not running out of ammo anytime soon, fortunately.
Apparently, we also have blacksmiths at the Hilltop, so I feel like that's helpful. I feel like that's helpful in terms of your knife supply is really never gonna go down too low.
There's an industry that's coming back in style, you would think, with force. Somebody somewhere is, making shoes for horses, and that was like all he had, and now the zombie apocalypse hits and hey, business is booming, everyone needs a sword now.
Those I don't know what it's called, that like YouTube channel with the blacksmiths, like those guys are really set in the Walking Dead universe. Like if the zombie apocalypse ever happens, those guys are fine.
Yeah, what about those guys with like the sciencey YouTube channels that like can like insta cool metal and stuff, like make some cool stuff? You'd think one of those guys would be around and be like, look, let me show you how to do this in 15 seconds using this chemical compound. Where's that guy? Eugene pretends to be that guy.
Yes. That guy's going to become Eugene's replacement if Eugene's not careful.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're seeing all of this where everybody's training and Maggie is drawing out plans and like feasting on apples and peanut butter and stuff. Everybody's taking really good care of Maggie here at the Hilltop.
Yeah, it seems like she's really won the hearts and minds of the people. She's
the future,
tough.
Alex.
She's resilient.
She's the future.
In the wake of Glenn's death. She's pregnant and she's still carrying on and planting stuff and, making people respect her decisions and her leadership. And meanwhile, Gregory just sitting there drinking from his snifter, just kind of above it all, seemingly separate. Not really a man of the people. Gregory.
Oh, no. Well, he has his friends, and that's really all he cares about. But I do think it's interesting that, you're seeing all of these scenes. Maggie's, sketching things out, and she's obviously planning for the future of the Hilltop, and you see these scenes of Sasha is also sketching things out, but she's trying to figure out how to get to the sanctuary. So you're really seeing Maggie, I feel like, trying to figure out how to make some peace here in this community, and Sasha, meanwhile, is really ready to go to war. The real deal breaker is when Jesus hooks her up with an outline of the sanctuary, and that's going to help her figure out exactly how they're going to take on Negan.
Why can't these people just wait a minute? What's wrong with you? I don't understand.
Look, that's absolutely fair.
Just sit still for a second. It's not like other people are like anti your agenda. They're just not quite there yet. They have a bigger picture. Just chill.
Yeah.
Just don't understand.
I think also when the Saviors roll up, when Simon and the Saviors roll up to the Hilltop in this episode, and Sasha and Rosita decide that they're just going to go now, when you have no idea what's about to happen here. And if Sasha's like really invested in Maggie being the future of the Hilltop, what if they're all about to get wiped out right now? Maybe stick around with that sniper rifle and just make sure everything's going to be okay here. And then you could always go to Negan's place the next day.
It's a decent point.
Listen.
It raises,
even an episode I really like, Alex, there's going to be something to pull on. But,
we could
really get lost in the weeds of that.
And I think maybe, for me, it's just harder in the fact that we really haven't built up Sasha and Rosita at all in this back half. So to spend so much time focused on them now, it just feels like we're really just like cramming it all in the box,
Well, I kind of disagree with that. I feel like the dynamic between Rosita and Sasha hasn't been, front and center on the show by any stretch of the imagination. But I do think that it's been on the mind of the show. And even going back to that mid-season premiere, there's that moment when they're walking away from the kingdom because Ezekiel says, no, we're not going to join in on this. Sorry, guys. Good luck. Daryl can hang out, though, because Daryl's cool. You see Rosita and Sasha, they're walking away, and Sasha's trying to be like, man, this place is so weird, and why aren't they playing along? That's so annoying. And Rosita's like, shut up, I don't want to talk to you. So, we've had a lot of stuff along the way that has really hinted at the tension between these two.
Touché.
So I think that that's been littered throughout the season, and certainly since Sasha and Abraham have started going out. I feel like that has been earned. Maybe the stuff that isn't so earned is that all of a sudden Rosita is the best at everything, according to Sasha, and obviously according to Rosita. I feel like that kind of emerged out of nowhere, but I feel like the dynamic between these two characters, that feels like that's been established for a few episodes now.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. And at least we got some explanation here as to how Rosita has some of these skill sets that she appears to have. She's dated some gnarly dudes in the past with some gnarly skills.
Yeah, we'll get into that for sure. So after Rosita comes into town and we, you know, the first act of the episode kind of ends where a few episodes ago had ended previously. Rosita coming and talking to Sasha and saying, we got to go after Negan. Sasha, by the time we catch up with her at the start of the second act, has clearly already agreed to all of this. And she listens in on a conversation with Maggie and Jesus. And Jesus is talking about how, like, I've never felt like I belonged here at the Hilltop. Now I do. You know, making you and Sasha feel at home here has really made me feel at home. Before, I would be here, but I wouldn't really be here. I wouldn't get to know anybody. I wouldn't be, you know, become cozy with any neighbors, any friends, any boyfriends. Alex, big revelation. Jesus is gay.
There you go.
How about that?
Jesus. How about that?
Who knew?
Time to start thinking about a different kind of shipping for Jesus if you were inclined to do that.
Yeah, man. I mean, listen, there's some possibilities here. This is great. Obviously, if you were somebody who has read The Walking Dead comic books, you already knew this. But Alex, were you aware before you started reading The Walking Dead comics that Jesus was gay? Was that chatter already on your radar? Because I don't have any sort of sense of that. How many people knew this or didn't know this? Is this a big bombshell? Is this a big shock? To me, this is just something that's been a part of the character for a very long time, but it's just finally now announced on the show.
I don't know if it's just not a big deal or if it's not a super talked about secret from the comics, but no, I didn't know until I started reading the comics this winter. It's cool for the character. I mean, it's a good twist because he's so capable and he's such a badass and he's so good with the martial arts. And then he's also, like, you know, sensitive and quiet and brooding. Like, there's a lot of layers to this character. So yeah, I mean, I think he's a really good representation of gay people on television. So yeah, I'm kind of happy with it.
I also loved the coming out scene between him and Maggie, where it's just like super casual, where he just drops and then he just like gives her a look and she's just like, yeah, totally cool. This is great. I thought it was a great scene. I really, really enjoyed that. I'm excited to see where they take it. If it's just going to be like a quiet note about the character, or if we're going to see Jesus couple up with anybody. I know we're always talking about, like, you know, how long is Eric for this world?
Yeah.
So could we be seeing like a Jesus Aaron thing in the future? Like, imagine season 26 of The Walking Dead and Jesus and Aaron are like the two people in charge of all of this. That I would be on board for that.
That's a good looking Spaghetti Tuesday dinner. I think,
yes.
I could definitely see that. Frankly, I'm amazed Jesus is single. I mean, this is a very handsome, seemingly well-educated guy. He's got a level head on his shoulders, can take care of himself. You'd think
eligible bachelor.
Someone would snatch him right up. Yeah.
Yeah, I would. I think Jesus is the most eligible bachelor in The Walking Dead right now.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see where that goes. I think that why he's single, I mean, he's talking about that. Like, he just doesn't feel like, you know, he's fit in here at the Hilltop. I think that he has felt like, you know, he's been on the road and he's been pretty closed off. And I think that the introduction of the Alexandrians into his life has kind of opened that up for him. So that's cool. I think that's great. You know, The Walking Dead is a show that's going to be on forever. It already feels like that it's been on forever. And a lot of characters come and go as a result of that. You know, we only have a very small handful of people from the very earliest days of the show still on the show. So the more characters we're amassing, the more people we're bringing into the mix here, hopefully they're going to be rich, vividly drawn characters with, you know, subtle backstories, with drawn out backstories, with all sorts of little details about them. So I think that the more that you can flesh out these characters, the better. I think this is a great note for Jesus. I really like how the show introduced it. So I'm happy about that. I think that's a really cool revelation.
You know, it's just one more note on a character that has just seemingly endless skill sets. I mean, I think he's probably the most capable person in this world that we know of. Not only can he fight with weapons or without, I mean, he can do, you know, seemingly he has a good social connection with everybody at all the different camps. And then also he can just like draw, you know, entire elaborate maps from pure memory and stuff. So this guy's amazing.
He's probably the MVP, I think. Like, if you were to draft.
There's a reason they call him Jesus, and it's not just the look.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point. That's a really good point. I think that's right. I mean, if you think about like all of the main characters on the show right now, like who is like the triple threat or even the quadruple threat? Like who is somebody that can really do it all? I do think that Jesus has to be among the very first people you would think of. Like who even gives him a run for the money? Maybe Carol? Carol is probably up there.
Yeah, maybe. But Jesus just seems so much more, comfortable with his role and everything. Carol's getting there, but we'll see.
She's getting there. She'll be
sure, he's still out.
So Sasha overhears this conversation, and Maggie and Jesus, they go and walk off, and Sasha and Maggie have like a very quick, like, you know, arm touch before Maggie goes off. But listen, given the way that this episode ends, it's very likely that we're on borrowed time with Sasha, and this may have been the final Sasha and Maggie moment that we ever get on the show. If that's the case, is that a satisfying final moment for Sasha and Maggie, or would you have wanted a little bit more?
I guess it's okay. I mean, just because the nature of this show is that you don't necessarily get all the resolution you're hoping for. You know, a good example is when Denise dies. It's just so sudden. It just takes you out of the element. You know, there's just an arrow in the middle of a speech like that. And I think that's kind of what The Walking Dead is all about, is that, you know, life is sudden and unpredictable, and there's not really a lot that you can control. So there's all these elements at play there, I think. And I think that's why it's good that not everybody gets great, you know, final resolution before maybe being taken off the board, so to speak. That being said, I mean, I could see a scenario where Sasha's still okay, or like Negan's just like holding her captive now. But
yeah,
man, if so, Negan, you know, it's hard to continue to look at him as such a villain when our characters keep just killing his guys left and right. I mean, I know we don't know them, but it's not like they're necessarily nobodies. Like maybe they matter to somebody.
They probably matter to somebody, but you know, they made their choice, Alex. They're on the wrong side of the war here, and you know, it's wartime now.
It's true.
So if you're Negan, and I mean that in like the royal sense, like if you are one of the many Negans, then you are a target. At this point, it's fair game.
Yeah, I just think it's kind of interesting how it still seems like the body count favors Rick and everybody. Like they've still done more damage at this point. That first silo was a lot of people.
I mean, listen, you bring up a good argument. The whole satellite station. I think if you were to watch Walking Dead from the ground up from Negan's point of view, Rick would look like a real dick.
I've been pretty fair. I don't understand this. Yeah. I just hit a couple of guys. You took out an entire city.
So Sasha is going to go off with Rosita to come after Negan. First, she needs to arm up because she has a gun now, but she doesn't have the ammunition. But apparently, Jesus has a Bible filled with bullets. So she's going to go and steal some bullets, and she's going to get caught stealing these bullets by Jesus and Enid. And I feel like she had a really crummy excuse. She was like, I was just looking for something to read. And then I found that. What a coincidence. And she's like, stop that. Come on. I know what's going on.
Yeah, the only way it could have been worse is if the Bible just opens up and all the bullets fall out. She's like, what?
I had no idea. You've been holding out on me, Jesus. Oh, my God.
Bullet Bible's a nice touch, though.
The Bullet Bible is a nice touch. So she opens up the Bullet Bible. She's got some bullets. Jesus knows what's going on and is basically saying, like, you do not have to do this. I know you really want to. You can wait for us to all be ready, and then we will really be in tip-top shape to go after Negan and everybody. Sasha has a difference of opinion. Apparently, they've been over this. They've talked this through a few times. They figure, you know, Jesus and Enid are basically like, all right, we're not going to be able to change your mind, but you at least have to talk to Maggie about it. And Sasha's kind of like, I don't know that I need to talk to Maggie about it. I feel like that's probably not the best way to go. And by the way, Maggie doesn't need me. She's got you guys. So Sasha's really feeling like maybe she's not the most valuable player here in the Hilltop. That feels like a sudden change of heart for me, because I feel like Sasha has really taken on being Maggie's champion all season long, and suddenly she's just really ready to give up that job.
Yeah, not only that, I thought we had pretty firmly established that Sasha's the best shot. I mean, she's just like putting guys down with single shots. Like, it's nothing, I mean, at this point. So the idea that, like, you don't need me, it's like, well, just don't go throwing yourself away. I mean, just because maybe we don't like have to have you doesn't mean we can't use you. I mean, what are you doing?
No, I think that you got to put Sasha on the list of possible MVPs as well, because she is the best shot in the group, and it's not close.
Assuming she's still around.
So Jesus is like, all right, you're going to go do your thing. Please tell Maggie. That would be cool if you tell Maggie. He leaves. Sasha and Enid have a nice little moment here where Sasha tells Enid that she has to protect Maggie no matter what. She says, Maggie's the future of this place. I know know it. So are you. And I feel like in saying that, Sasha is sketching out Rob Cesternino's nightmare scenario where Maggie and Enid are the future of The Walking Dead. I feel like Rob will stop watching at that point. Throw Rosita in there as well, and I think he's out. I think he's done.
Maggie's got a baby, so of course, you know, the pregnant woman, it's like, you're the future. Like, you almost have to say that. Like, what else can you say? If you were to say someone else was the future in front of the pregnant woman, she would be offended.
Oh, of course.
Like, what about me? I'm about to have a child in this crazy world. How dare you?
The future is literally inside me. So Sasha is going to give Enid a bracelet that she's been working on for Maggie's baby. She's going to tell Enid to work on it while I'm gone. Do you think that we're going to get a 90-minute episode of Enid just working on that bracelet?
Priorities.
Priorities. That might be a webisode.
I'm not a huge fan of this decision.
This is a great idea because every year, obviously, we have to have a webisode stretched out across the entirety of a season of Walking Dead. Last year, we had Fear of the Flying Dead. This year, we have whatever the hell is going on in these tunnels.
Fear of the Mining Dead.
Next year is just going to be the Stitching Dead, and it's just going to be Enid stitching bracelets over the course of an entire season, 1 minute at a time.
Fear of the Spelunking Dead. That's what this one is.
Oh, I like the Spelunking Dead. Is it even a minute? Are these, it's like 30 seconds these things last.
Yeah, I like look down for a second and it's gone.
Oh, it's brutal. It's the absolute worst. It's the absolute worst. All right, so just as Sasha is getting ready to get out of here, the Saviors roll into town. And as we discussed already, I feel like this is a moment where Rosita's even like, where are we going to hide? And Sasha's the one who's like, we're not going to hide. We're just going to go and do the thing. And I feel like this is probably a time to just like, you know, maybe dial it back just a touch. Maybe camp out. Maybe just make sure that everybody here at the Hilltop is okay. You could always go after the Saviors tomorrow.
Yeah, I feel like Rosita in many ways, she's like that kid that like asks for something without realizing the ramifications. And then, you know, once she gets it, she's like, oh, maybe I didn't want it. You know, when she orders like 3 desserts and then like her parents let her have them. And then she realizes she can't even finish like all of the first one. And buyer's remorse now.
Oh, man. Couldn't even finish one of the 3 desserts. That's really pathetic if that's the case.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it happens.
I thought that she was the best at everything, Alex. I guess she's not the best at eating dessert.
Well, she's clearly not the best at everything. So let's go ahead and put that to bed right now.
All right. We'll put that away. But the Saviors are here. Enid is going to lock Daryl and Maggie in a little shelter together. This is the second time in the episode that we're seeing Daryl. We did not talk about this before, but in that opening montage, I thought that there was this really kind of, you know, kind of emotional moment where Daryl is, you know, sharpening something on a picnic bench and Maggie comes out and brings him some food. And clearly these two have not really talked things over since he's been to the Hilltop. And, you know, not really talking through everything that happened with Glenn. He's clearly, as we're going to see in this episode, he's feeling a ton of guilt over that. Maggie's not mad at Daryl, but I think he thinks that she is. So this is going to be awkward, the two of them in this underground bunker for a little while. They're going to have to get through some stuff.
And, you know, Daryl's like pondering some deep, heavy stuff when he's sharpening. That seems to be his go-to.
He's always pondering.
Big fan of the sharpening.
Yeah, he's a very ponderous guy, this Daryl.
Yeah, let me just go out here and sharpen some stuff, think about some things.
So Simon rolls in, and there's a great, like, handshake between Simon and Gregory, where this just, like, feels like an outtake. Like, it doesn't even feel real. Like, they're just, like, going, ha-ha, Simon, so good to see you. And Simon's like, ha-ha, Gregory, my good friend. It just doesn't feel like it's real, but it is, and it's happening. And Simon tells Gregory that you've got something. You've got a certain somebody who now needs to become Negan's certain somebody, and get your pointy finger out and I'll tell you who it is.
Yeah, I think the thing is these guys just know exactly who each other is at this point. Gregory is just trying to be who he thinks Simon wants him to be, and Simon knows that Gregory's just trying to be who Simon wants him to be. So it creates this interesting dynamic where you don't know. I mean, at any point, Simon could just decide, like, oh, isn't that fun? And just kill him. Like, it remains tense, even though it seems at times loose and based in camaraderie, because you just know that Simon recognizes this guy for what he is, that he's just always going to tell you what he thinks you want to hear.
I think that's a really good point. point that I feel like at any moment between these two guys, like any scene that Simon and Gregory are in, it's not inconceivable that Simon is just going to like stab Gregory in the chest at any given point.
Yeah, it's like he's going to pat his head or snap his neck. Like, could go either way.
Could go either way. Well, he does say, "I'm an unusual kind of creature." That's how Simon describes himself when he's talking about how he's a man of shifting tastes. He's no longer a gin guy. He had a really bad drink. Gin now tastes like turpentine. It happened very quickly. I'm into tequila now. It's a real good window into just how cushy it is with the Saviors.
Well, he's definitely got a great face. He's got an unusual face. Whoever made him that drink, I can't imagine they're doing too well.
Oh,
right
yeah.
Now.
I got to imagine that person went the way of the first Dr. Carson.
Yeah.
So speaking of Dr. Carson, Simon's going to talk about how there's a certain somebody who now needs to become Negan's certain somebody. In that moment, are you thinking that he's coming after Harlan Carson, the doctor at the Hilltop? Or do you think that he has figured out somehow that either Maggie or Daryl is here?
No, I assumed he was talking about the doctor because it kind of follows where they had said there's another doctor. We know that's going to be a priority for the Saviors if they don't just skip over that in terms of the show.
Yeah.
So once I saw that Dr. Carson is still at the Hilltop, I'm like, all right, well, this guy's clearly going to be a priority to get him back to the Sanctuary.
100%. So Sasha and Rosita, they're escaping the Hilltop through the secret tunnel. There's a secret tunnel here, Alex, in the Hilltop that's apparently in like, I don't know, like some sort of like little shed that has a secret exit out of the Hilltop that apparently Sasha built. Maggie was like, we need a secret exit, and so I built it. How long have they been here? How is it possible that Sasha, with all of this time, does she have the time on her hands to build this secret tunnel? I just don't understand, like, logistically how that worked out.
Well, I mean, I guess she's taken all the lookout duties at Alexandria, and they don't need her to do lookout duty here, so she's just been tunneling away.
Wow. I wish that we'd gotten the tunneling montage.
Channeling her inner mole.
Yeah. Oh, is Sasha the mole? I wouldn't have guessed it. I'm always on Mole Patrol, and maybe I'm lapsing on that.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe not in the metaphorical sense, but in the literal sense where... get to digging. Somebody's been doing a lot of digging.
All right, so Sasha and Rosita are out of there, and we are now going to see one of a few attempts to hotwire a car. Rosita is trying to get them a car to get them to the Sanctuary faster. And as she's hotwiring or trying to hotwire one of them, Sasha leans into the car, and Rosita sees the necklace that Sasha is wearing, and it turns out that it's the same necklace that Rosita had made for Abraham. And this is just salt in the wounds, Alex. This is no good. This is really just rubbing it in Rosita's face at this point.
Yeah, she doesn't need any more of that. But yeah, here she is. Yeah, another useful skill, just hotwiring cars and rigging explosives.
She's good at everything. Not even good at everything, Alex. She's the best at everything.
Yeah, do you get the feeling that, like, if we ever saw a flashback to Rosita with, like, this old boyfriend that taught her stuff, he'd be played by Vin Diesel? That's how I feel.
I feel like Rosita would be good in The Fast and Furious. Like, I feel like that would be... I feel like she could hang with the family. I wouldn't be surprised to find out that Rosita and Letty are secretly related.
Or, like, yeah, she just gets that car going and, like, gets it up to speed, and all of a sudden, what's that song? Just click, click.
Yeah, man. I don't know. Walking Dead, Alexandrian Drift. I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be a good spinoff.
Too dead, too furious.
Too dead, too furious, indeed. So Rosita and Sasha, they're going to like do a little bit of small talk, or at least Sasha's trying to. She's like, how did you learn how to disarm bombs, by the way? And Rosita's really quickly like, can we not talk? Can we not talk about that? It's like at once, it's clearly Rosita being like, I don't like you that much, Sasha. I don't want to talk to you. Just being like classic Rosita. And then it also felt in the same breath like, don't ask me to explain that. It's going to be very convoluted and no one's going to believe what I have to say. Let's just accept that I'm really good at disarming bombs.
You can almost hear the producer saying, we're not going to do that.
Yeah. And let's dial that back. Even though Sasha is asking the question that we had asked literally like 4 weeks earlier.
And then, right. It's like Sasha's like operating against the show's will there for a second where it's like, no, I really want to know. Like I'm sacrificing my life. You can't just tell me that. Like Sasha, stop it. We don't have an answer to this question for you.
I was dying. I thought that was great. It's like, oh, man, just tell us. Give us the answer, Rosita. Damn it.
I dated people who knew things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's ultimately the big reveal. But we get this scene now where she's saying, like, let's not talk unless we're talking about the mission. And Sasha said, okay, then let's talk about the mission. And she sketches out what her vision for it is. It's basically, there's a building that is decently close to the sanctuary. It's got a good view of the back courtyard. We hole up, we wait, and we take the shot at Negan. And if we do this and we do it clean, maybe we make it out of there alive. Rosita does not like this plan. Rosita wants to go in. She wants to go in and make sure it's done. She just wants to annihilate this place. She doesn't trust that if Sasha takes the shot, that Sasha won't miss. Sasha says, I won't miss. I'm not sure that you're not going to get caught. Rosita says, I won't get caught. So we're in two very polar opposite sides of the equation here, Alex.
Stubborn and stupid is a dangerous combination in this world.
And a stinky cologne as well. But yeah, I liked this scene too, because they're having this argument as like the, it's like kind of like a, you know, it's just like a one-er as the camera is sort of coming back and they're just like walking towards us. It's kind of like a Sorkin style walk and talk, or a walker and talk, I suppose would be the better way of describing it. They're just like nonchalantly stabbing zombies as they're having this conversation.
Yeah, that's good. And yeah, the planning is good. It's a little bit like the pre-strategy war room in Zero Dark 30.
Yeah.
It's like, are we going for a direct raid? Are we going to try to post that? Well, he never comes outside, so we've got to factor that into the equation.
There's a lot to discuss. There's a lot to determine, and it's difficult when these two colleagues clearly do not get along to begin with. So lots to figure out there. Enid is on guard duty. Of course, Enid is like quintessential guard duty. Like when you're playing Capture the Flag, you have Enid guard the base. She's apparently terrible at this. There's a savior who comes by to try to get into the shelter where Daryl and Maggie are holed up. And I thought this was incredible. When Enid rolls up, she goes, hey, I've got some fresh veggies for you. And the guy's just like, stop it. They're vegetables. Use the whole word. We have time. That was just fantastic.
He's not buying any of your fresh veggies today.
No.
No, ma'am.
They're vegetables. Grow up. It's just great. Just putting Enid in her place because we cannot.
There's no Santa Claus, little girl. Go home.
Yeah. The Easter Bunny isn't real either. The Tooth Fairy was real, but she died in the apocalypse.
My parents didn't let me have a childhood, so you shouldn't get one neither.
We're in the apocalypse now. We don't have to eat our veggies. We can eat whatever we want.
That's right. Yeah, he's just at the sanctuary eating kettle chips and nothing else till his teeth falls out.
Probably cardamom gelato as well, apparently.
Yeah, right. Well, that's quite a luxury.
Cardamom gelato. I couldn't believe that. And he takes her knife away, which is probably a good thing. I don't know what good comes from Enid having that.
That Enid slips up and stabs herself somehow. Depends on your perspective.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it could be just, it feels very accident prone with the roller skating and the knife. It's probably a bad combo. But this guy, he's going to go down into the shelter, and we're going to see the fallout from that in a little bit. But first, we're going to see why Simon has come to the hilltop. He has come to summon a new Dr. Carson to the sanctuary, and this is when Dr. Harlan Carson says, well, why does Negan need two doctors? Why would you need a second doctor? Doesn't that seem like it would be a little much? And this is when Simon gives him like a straight like 8 seconds of just odd faces.
Yeah.
It's just a great Simon moment. Obviously, I love this character. Every time Simon's on screen, like you said before, I think like you never know whether it's going to be a funny moment or a really scary moment is going to come next. That's just sort of the greatness of Stephen Ogg.
It is really good. And I think it allows for, you know, because that's in many ways, that's who Negan's character is, too. But it would just be overkill if it was Negan in all of these scenes. So I think it's a good dynamic in that it's different, but kind of the same. I mean, it definitely echoes the same underlying scariness that I think Gavin's just not bringing the same oomph to the table.
No. They needed, like, you know, we were almost there, right? Like, we've got Negan. He's in charge of the Saviors. He's a compelling, charismatic character. You've got Simon. He's a compelling, charismatic character. They really could have done a little bit better with Gavin. Although I kind of like Gavin's, you know, really dour, sourpuss energy. Maybe that's like a good note to kind of balance things out, where he's just like, you know, the real like down on his luck, hates to be here employee of the Saviors. That might be a good look. I feel like maybe that's important to represent.
I guess. I don't know. I think maybe you stick that guy in the mailroom.
I mean, maybe he recently got promoted from the mailroom. He's like, I miss the mailroom. I got a lot of reading done.
Reminds me of that game they used to play on Sesame Street. Which one of these things is not like the other? It's definitely Gavin.
Definitely Gavin. So Simon is going to tell Dr. Carson, well, we don't need two doctors. That's the thing. We don't. That's not something that we need. But that means your brother is dead and you're going to have to come here pretty urgently. Dr. Carson is sad about this, but what are you going to do? He has no choice. He needs to come. Cardamom gelato is on the menu, so at least there's that. And hey, it's not like Simon's leaving the hilltop high and dry. There's aspirin, Alex.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what those were boxes of for a while, and when I realized, I was like, oh, that's pretty good. Fantastic trollsmanship, sir.
Pretty good. It's like a huge, like, treasure chest filled with aspirin, but you only see the top layer, and it made me wonder if this was, like, one of those tricks in the movie where, like, you're giving the briefcase of money to the bad guys, and it's only the top layer has actual money, and underneath is just, like, empty boxes of stuff. Like, if you'd really dug into the aspirin chest, I bet it's not all aspirin.
Yeah, it's like Simon's dirty socks and, like, that kind of stuff. It's just like, oh, yeah, wash those. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, even at this point, Gregory, who is a total craven, even Gregory can't handle this. He's like, Simon, we gotta talk. We need to talk this through. You can't do this. You can't just take my doctor. I am a can-do guy. You know that I'm good at talking with you and producing for you and being game for everything you've got, but I have to have some trust here with my people. And if you take the doctor, this is going to look really, really bad for me. And you just don't know what would happen next. It's not inconceivable that somebody would come in and take my job and that person wouldn't be as cooperative with you. And Simon really kind of raises an eyebrow at this idea of like, is there an insurrection brewing? Like, should I be nervous about this? And Gregory's like, I don't know. It's just like a thing to keep in mind.
I was talking about it a little bit on one of the other shows, but like, I think we are at kind of a point where Negan's had so much success with the same methods for so long that I don't think insurrection is something that's really a front of mind for these guys. And I think Gregory even just bringing up the idea is not great if you're Team Rick or whatever. I think you let this guy to shut up for the most part.
Yeah.
And that's not going to be his inclination. He's going to want to go and spill some secrets so he can get more free tequila and fake friendship.
Yeah, so Simon draws a map very quickly, I might add, for Gregory in case anything ever happens. If the worst case scenario happens, come pay me a visit. I'll tell the guard who you are. You tell him who you are, and he will show you straight to me. We'll drink some tequila. We'll have a good time. We'll work it out. This can't just be on the show for no reason, right? Like, Gregory has to take up Simon's invitation at some point.
You would certainly think so.
Yeah, I can't imagine why it would be here otherwise. I mean, what are some of the other options? If it's not Gregory is going to take Simon up on this offer, does Gregory die somehow and somebody finds the map on Gregory and they use that to go to the Saviors, but they already know how to get there? So I feel like this isn't on the show unless this is going to happen. And if this is going to happen, this is great for a couple of reasons. One, a scene between Simon and Gregory promised in the future, and two, that buys them a little bit more time on the show. Like, they'll be alive for at least that long.
That's a good point. And I just think that could also be a catalyst for, he never really leaves that mansion, but if he were to start like going out, people are like, where are you going? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Don't worry about it. And then maybe someone like Jesus follows him and sees what he's doing. You know, it's one thing for him to be indifferent and kind of like an aloof douche and not really care about people. But once he's selling you out to the Saviors, I think that's like a turning point where people are like, all right, like, we can't let this guy have any kind of say over us anymore.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think that's something to keep an eye out for. That feels to me like season 8 material. I feel like this isn't going to be something that's going to pay off. There's no time to pay this off this season. But that heartens me, Alex. That makes me feel like there's hope for Simon to at least make it to season 8.
Yeah, that would be cool. I'm certainly on board for more Stephen Ogg. I think he's been really great in this series.
I also liked how Simon says to Gregory, you're a good producer for us. I don't want you to be so stressed. And Gregory's like, I'd be so much less stressed if you didn't take my doctor. And Simon's immediately like, Gregory, come on. You know what's going on.
Well, it's an interesting question. Like, what would they do if he's just like, no, I'm not going? Like, he's the last doctor, right? Like, what do you really, like, you can't break his hands. You can't kill him.
You can't break his hands. But you've got so many Saviors with him, with you, that you could just grab him and take him by force. And eventually he's going to have to do it.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. So we see Daryl and Maggie. Daryl is about to kill the guy who does not like veggies, but he does not have to kill Veggie Douche. Ultimately, Veggie Douche is going to leave. And Maggie is going to finally make Daryl talk. Daryl's very, very weepy. He's very apologetic. He feels like it's his fault for what happened to Glenn. And Maggie really insists. She says, it wasn't your fault. You're one of the good things in this world. That's what Glenn thought, and he would know because he was one of the good things, too. So it seems like water under the bridge now, finally, between Maggie and Daryl.
Maggie is remarkably resilient. It seems very evident, and I think that's part of why the people around her seem to be one to take so much care of her. A lot of people seem to admire her.
Do you think that, you know, the whole Daryl getting Glenn killed thing, like the way that they structured that out on the show in the first episode of season 7, if this is where we end up with it, if Daryl has been kind of carrying that burden with him all season long, does this feel like a solid resolution to that, that Maggie's just very quick to just be like, dude, it's not a problem. This one's not on you.
I think given the amount of time that's passed, yeah, because we've kind of seen Maggie go through varying stages of grief already. Like, she really kind of took it out on Rick at one point. So it's like she's directed her anger at friends already, and she's kind of moved past that stage. Daryl was kind of, like, just lucky he wasn't around for that. Like,
well, lucky is a, I don't know, given the dog food sandwiches, yes.
Yeah, I'm sure you'd rather get yelled at by Maggie than fed Alpo by Dwight, but...
Yeah, I think so. All right, so it seems like they're cool. That's great. I'm happy about that. I just want everybody to get along here. And we're actually going to see that Rosita and Sasha are finally going to start getting along. First, there is this, you know, kind of little action scene where Rosita sets a car on fire, and they use that as a distraction to hotwire another car. Although the fire really didn't seem to distract the walkers for very long. I mean, they're very lucky that they were able to hotwire the next car so easily, because they very easily could have been zombie chow.
Yeah, but that's a move right out of Rosita's ex-boyfriend Vin Diesel's playbook. Big explosions, yes, yes. You know, you gotta make a scene. You gotta really let them know you're there.
Yes, as you mentioned, two dead, two furious. Very much in effect here. But we see Rosita and Sasha, they get to the place where they're going to stake out a spot to try and snipe Negan. We're going to get a check-in with Eugene, first time in a little while, see what Eugene is up to, and Eugene's plan of smelting the walkers up against the fence is working. Does look pretty badass, as Eugene had described and as Negan was hoping for, so that's pretty cool. Rosita is very much insisting that Eugene is playing some kind of angle. I think that maybe the jury is a little bit out on that question now, given what happens with Eugene later in the episode, but at the moment, at least, Rosita is not too concerned.
Yeah, it's that Theon Greyjoy angle.
Yeah. Well, hopefully not the full Theon Greyjoy. I don't want to wish that upon Eugene. I think Eugene is smart enough to know that he does not need to go full Reek in order to become Reek.
No, but he did wish that on Dwight, so it's, you know, yeah, it all comes full circle.
Yes, indeed. So Rosita and Sasha, they finally bond over knots. You know, I have bonded over knots in the past as well, Alex, typically garlic knots, but this is a more useful version of knots. Rosita shows Sasha how to tie some fancy knots. Are you a knot guy, Alex? Do you know what kind of knot this was?
I am not.
Knot. thank you.
Only in Boy Scout camp do you see people come together over knots like this. This is really something.
I don't know. I'm not a big knot guy. You guys tell me if you're a knot guy out there what kind of knot that is. But we see Rosita and Sasha, they're talking this thing through, and Rosita's finally giving us the answers that we've been craving all this time of how the hell are you so good at everything, Rosita? And it turns out that there are a bunch of people that she met along the way in the aftermath of the zombie apocalypse. There was Johnny. Johnny was the guy who taught her about bombs. Marcus is this wannabe stunt driver and an asshole who taught her about cars.
That was definitely Vin Diesel.
That was Vin Diesel.
They were all Vin Diesel.
They were all
Vin Diesel.
One was
Vin Diesel with a mustache. One was Vin Diesel with a fedora.
Well, she says that Chaser was the guy who taught her how to tie knots, and she even admits that's not his real name. So that guy's clearly Vin Diesel.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, with a name like Chaser. Yeah, that was Vin Diesel, and he had a part-time gig as an American Gladiator as well with that name.
Yeah, that really is. Chaser and Malibu were bros.
Laser and Chaser are on deck.
Laser, Chaser, and Malibu. They were all tight. and this is when Rosita's saying, like, there were others. You know, a lot of guys wanted to protect me because they felt there was no way I could protect myself. And they were right. I couldn't. And I hated the way that felt. So I rolled with it. They never even noticed that I was picking up everything that they knew how to do and I was doing it better. And then I would outgrow them and I would bounce. The sex was just for fun. The world's over. Everyone should be getting their rocks off. So in one, you know, quick little monologue, Rosita sums up exactly how she has managed to survive this long in the zombie apocalypse. And I got to say, not a bad strategy.
do what works for you. Certainly sounds like a relatively stress-free way to go about all this, if you got the option.
Yeah, you know, glean some, you know, useful information from some people, and if they're jerks, you don't hang too long. You just hang long enough until you've got, you know, all the information you need. You know, go to Boinktown while you're there. That could be fun. These guys seem like they're having a good time. She's having a blast. Everyone wins.
Yeah, how dare you take free room and board and sex and skill, life skills. Like, what a monster you must be.
Oh, my gosh. But apparently, I mean, Sasha's a little nervous at first. She's like, I hope that's not how you viewed Abraham. She's like, oh, no, Abraham was the best. Abraham was great. He saw that I could handle my shit. And once I got with him, I never looked back. It's a shame that Abraham looked back, unfortunately. You know, Abraham and Sasha were, or Abraham and Rosita, rather, were not able to keep it together. And apparently, you know, Rosita, when they got to Alexandria, she just wasn't feeling it. Like, she didn't feel like we'd made it. Like, we made it to the end of the line. We're finally at the thing we've been searching for. But Abraham, he felt that way. And she was frustrated that he figured his shit out before she figured hers. And she has been taking that out on Sasha.
Yeah, Abraham got there. I think we obviously didn't see the mental transition from living in the woods to living in Alexandria for everybody, but we did kind of see it for Rick. Like, I still remember that scene where he's at that welcome to Alexandria party, yeah. And he's got the 1,000-yard stare going on, and he's like shell-shocked. Jesse's trying to talk to him, and it just kind of like fuzzes over. So, you know, I get it. Like, they all kind of had this transition they had to go through, and I think it helped that, you know, Rick found purpose with kind of being the police officer or the sheriff or whatever Deanna made him. And Abraham managed to, like, work his way quickly to, like, foreman of the wall or whatever he was. So they found ways to busy themselves. And I think maybe that was Rosita's problem in a sense, too, is she was what was she doing? I mean, we don't know for sure, but my guess would be, like, brooding on the porch for long stretches of time. And that's no good for you.
And there was at least, like, a month time jump, too, somewhere in season 6 where we have no idea what was going on there. And that may have just been Rosita being really bummed. But either way, she never felt like she fit in at Alexandria the way that Abraham did. Abraham found Sasha, was very, very happy. And now the biggest thing that's sticking in Rosita's craw is that she never got a chance to tell Abraham that I'm happy that you were happy. And then she asks Sasha, were you happy? And Sasha says, I was. And the two of them, they bond over the fact that Abraham did not die the way that Abraham would have wanted to die. Abraham would have wanted to go out fighting, and Negan took that away from him. This is where Sasha talks about Abraham would have wanted to go out with a point to going out. That's what everybody wants. I kind of feel like Abraham, there was a point to Abraham going out, certainly in the Michael Cutlet's interpretation of events, that Abraham is taking one for the team.
Well, yeah, and I think it raises an interesting question, because if Sasha dies this way, is there a point to her going out right now, actually?
There is if she's able to kill Negan. But as we've discussed on these podcasts before, what are the odds that Sasha is the one who gets to kill Negan? Pretty slim, I feel like.
The Vegas betting odds would not be high.
Yeah, I feel like that would be pretty low. So, I don't know. You know, if Sasha's point to going out is that she is able to cause some havoc and do some damage against the Saviors and save Rosita's life in the process and give Rosita enough time to maybe figure out what is her purpose, what's her point to being here, maybe there's a point to that. I think that's certainly what Sasha's trying to do at the end of the episode when she goes on the other side of the fence and lets Rosita go. I think that she's trying to be like, Abraham helped me see my point. Now, through me, let Abraham help you see your point. So I think that there's a little bit of, full circle stuff going on there. I think that that's kind of cute.
And I got to think that Rosita is really going to have it out for Eugene now, because, you know, they seem to have some semblance of a plan. And then everything kind of changed up when he was there and they were like, all right, Eugene, just come on. Like, we'll just get Eugene out of here. That'll be a win. And then Eugene's not leaving.
He's not leaving.
That seems to be an easy person to blame if you're Rosita, who now feels semi-responsible for losing another friend.
Yeah. All right. So we'll talk through how that's going. Because Sasha, she goes to look to see if Negan is there. Negan shows up just as Simon and Dr. Carson roll up from the hilltop. She's not able to get a good shot in. They turn on the radio to hear what's going on, and they overhear Eugene, who is very much in character as one of the Negans. He says, this is Per Negan, who I also am. Dr. Eugene Porter, chief engineer, also known as Negan, who I am.
Yeah, it almost sounded like someone who was really bad at being a mole and was trying to be a mole. Like, yes, I am also Negan. That is who I am. Yes. I have sworn as such, and I will be upholding to that oath. Wink, wink. Oh, I don't say that part. But the weird thing is, you know, you think he means it in the moment. He's just really, he's really bad at telling the truth under pressure.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with Eugene, because, you know, we get this scene shortly thereafter where, since they couldn't get the shot on Negan, they decide, all right, we're going to do things Rosita's way. We're going to storm the compound, and they snipe the guy who's standing next to Eugene. And Sasha is going to, or Rosita is going to say to Eugene, like, come on, let's get out of here. And Eugene says, I'm not going with you. I didn't ask you to come. So go. And then he goes back into the compound. And I know it's been a debate here on the podcast. Like, is Eugene actually in with the Saviors, or is he up to something, like Rosita says in this episode? Does this solidify for you, Alex, that Eugene is straight up on board with the Saviors, or is there still some, wait for it, wiggle room here with Eugene where maybe he is still up to something? Is there still room for that interpretation here?
I think the answer remains that Eugene is just trying to play with house money for as long as he can. He's going to try to, you know, use as much information as he can before he has to bet, and he's always going to try to back the winning horse. So I think as long as it's safe and he's not getting hurt, he's going to stay at the compound. But if Rick and the gang showed up with an army and he looks outside and it looks like things are going well, I think he would start, like, he would open the gate from inside or something like that. But Eugene is not the guy to, like, make a daring move. He's just going to wait for someone to kind of, like, clear the way for him, right?
Well, if that was the case, then, like, this would have been a great opportunity to go back to Alexandria. Like, you know, if he's waiting for someone to clear the way, like, here are his friends who are ready to take him home.
Yeah, but it's risky. It's just Rosita and Sasha. It's not like they've got, like, an army over the hill to take him to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
not necessarily the A squad.
He's waiting for the cavalry. Where's your cavalry? Without a cavalry, I cannot make this decision at this time. This is not a high percentage strategic move for me.
I don't think it's impossible that Eugene is still up to something. And, like, I'm not ready to go. I'm still working on my thing. I didn't ask you to come. Get out of here. I'm still working on my thing. I still think that that's possible. I don't think that that's impossible.
I think it's possible. I think it's probably just more probable that, you know, should Rick and them manage to take the compound and open all the doors and move out all the Saviors into the courtyard or whatever, Eugene would say, like, oh, my plan was, like, almost about to come to fruition. You guys, like, just beat me to actualizing whatever you had going on. This is a very easy out for Eugene either way, I feel.
All right, so Sasha is going to make Rosita stand guard. She's putting Rosita on guard duty, Enid style. And as she's doing that, she is duping Rosita. She is going to lock Rosita on the other side of the fence. I guess that's where this episode gets its title from. As Sasha tells Rosita, get out of here. It's not your time. There has to be a point to it, right? They need you. And then Sasha doesn't even wait for Rosita. She just runs off and starts shooting people in the compound, and we have no idea how that's going. But Rosita, who really wanted to be, you know, like the Sarah Connor who storms in and saves the day and fixes this situation, is now locked on the outside looking in, and lots of people probably bummed that it's Sasha who is choosing to go on the suicide mission instead of Rosita. But I thought that it was a cool moment. And I like the idea of Sasha kind of honoring Abraham by helping Rosita out here. Like, I feel like there's something cool there.
Rosita becomes new Sir Richard in that, you know, everything she keeps trying to do, like, kill me, and they're just shooting everyone else around her. Like, oh, well, this is how they operate.
Right. Well, if that's the case, then it's not long until Morgan chokes the life out of her.
I would steer clear of Morgan, even if you're his buddy at this point. We don't know where he's at. He could be painting clear all over the house right now as we speak.
So we have no idea how this is going to go. I mean, Sasha is in there. We don't know what the ultimate resolution for that is going to be. Rosita is able to escape. Daryl has found the sanctuary. He's shown up. He's somewhere in the distance. That's the final thing you see in the episode is just like a silhouette of Daryl. We kind of yada yada past the part where Daryl goes to Jesus and goes, "Where's Sasha and Rosita?" So clearly he knows that they went off to go and get Negan. And that's kind of just sort of the strange final note that we're left on here is Rosita is crying and Daryl is there. And it's really anyone's guess as to what's going to happen next.
It's so tough to get everyone on the same page without a walkie-talkie system.
It really is. It really is. More walkie-talkies, that would really save the day.
Just communication in general is a big factor here. Everyone seems to be a step behind. If people knew what other people had going on, they wouldn't do the things they do. It's a comedy of errors at times.
It's a comedy of errors at times. Anything else from this episode that you want to hop into, or do you think that we've talked it all through?
Nothing comes to mind.
I really liked this one. I thought it was good. And maybe it's because I really do love Sonequa Martin-Green as Sasha. I think that she's been a great character since she's been on the show. And I've been interested in the relationship between her and Rosita, even if I'm not a huge Rosita fan. Although I'll say I'm a bigger Rosita fan having listened to the Johnny Fairplay podcast on RHAP last week, that apparently Christian Serratos is a huge Survivor fan. Did you know that, Alex?
I did not know that until then. Yeah, that was a pretty cool little revelation. I guess it makes sense. She does love her some camo. At least the character does.
I don't know that we're getting Rosita on the podcast.
Seems a tall order.
I don't know if she's going to make it on the Survivor voicemails, but who knows? Stranger things have happened.
No, Stranger Things is a different show.
That's a different show. Who knows what's going to happen? I thought that the Daryl and Maggie stuff was pretty good. I loved the Jesus moment at the start of the episode. The Simon and Gregory scenes were really great. All in all, I thought it was a really solid episode of Walking Dead, especially for like the where the bar is for this season for me. Like, this was pretty good. I'm pretty happy. It's not my favorite of the season, but it's probably in the top. It's definitely in the top half, and it's probably in like the top three for me so far.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair assessment. I'm just, you know, it's pins and needles right now. I'm excited to get back to, you know, Rick trying to finagle this thing here. There's a lot to, you know, rope right now and get all together and all in one place. And it needs to happen. It needs to happen now. We've been waiting for it. We're ready for it.
So wrapping up here, hashtag let's go with two dead, two furious. That was good. I liked that. So that's pretty easy. So in honor of Rosita being one with the Toretto family, two dead, two furious, you could tweet that our way. I'm at Round Howard. Alex is at Alex Kidwell. You could also tweet to Rob. He's at Rob Sesternino. Because of Rob's travel schedule, and Alex is also coming out to New York, and I'm going to be busy with all this stuff as well. There is not going to be a Walking Dead feedback show this week. So the next time we're talking about Walking Dead, we are going to be talking about it after next Sunday's episode. So keep an eye and an ear out for that. Subscribe to what we're doing. postshowrecaps.com/TWD iTunes is how to subscribe to all of our Walking Dead podcasts. And for all of our podcasts in general on Post Show Recaps, go to postshowrecaps.com/iTunes. We've got some fun stuff coming your way. Iron Fist dropped over the weekend. Alex, I know you've already watched all of Iron Fist. I don't know how that's even possible.
Well, you know, when you're just hanging around, you're watching the first weekend of Big Brother Canada live feeds, and you're a perennial multitasker, sometimes just, wow, these things just happen.
I'm impressed by that. But anyway, Kevin Mahadeo and I, we will be podcasting about Iron Fist in about a week. It's going to take us a little longer to get through all of Iron Fist. We're going to binging Billy our way through all of Iron Fist and do it all as one podcast. So you are going to be listening to something that is spoiler-filled when you finally get to our Iron Fist podcast. Look for that to drop in about a week. If you've watched that show, send us your questions. postshowrecaps.com/feedback is the way to do that. Anything else going on with you, Alex? You said BB Can. How's BB Can going?
It's been great so far. Big Brother Canada 5 has been a pleasantly exciting season. You know, we were a little discouraged when we found out it was half returning players and half new players, but the returning players have been a hot mess. So it's actually been very, very fun. And in fact, one of the returning players who's a good friend of the podcast, many people have compared him to Negan's little brother, and I definitely see the resemblance.
Wow.
So shout out to my buddy Bruno. I hope he does well this season and takes the metaphorical bat to people.
Nice, nice. All right, well, tying it back into Walking Dead at the end, I love it. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. Really fun show with you, Alex, tonight. We'll talk to you all again next Sunday night when we reach the penultimate episode of season 7 of The Walking Dead. Take care, everybody. Goodbye.